You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for November 6, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the ancient pyramid where Mark Halperin's professional integrity is kept hermetically sealed, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
This is true.
Oh, God.
He won the Jeff Gannon blowjob interview of the year award.
He really did. Really
with
did.
His questioning of Jeb Bush after a rally. So are you really awesome? And are you really determined? And tell us, how where do you get all this great determination? Yeah, you have to hear it to believe it. I've been blogging. This is my blogiversary this week for 11 years.
Yeah.
And never, apart from Jeff Gannon, which I consider a one-off.
Yeah.
I have never seen an actual paid regular television journalist do this much dick sucking.
Groveling and dick sucking.
Even for Mark Halperin, this was horrible.
Yeah, even for Mark Halperin, this is great news for John McCain.
Yeah, I mean, it's worse than that. It's worse than that.
Well, he's a shitty person and a shitty journalist, and he has a job for life on MSNBC and NBC.
Well, and he believes in his heart of hearts that his job is to have access to these people, not to report the truth. And I do want to hat tip Shock at Twitter for letting us know about this interview, because I would have missed it otherwise. It was even worse than the Cokes on Morning Joe.
I just want to add that Mark Halperin is a regular, is not quite right, but a not infrequent guest. Mm-hmm. On right-wing radio. Glenn Beck mm-hmm. likes him and has had him on his show at least once that I heard, and is one of the groveliest, awfulest, most morally bankrupt scumbags on the air, period. And he has a radio show with his good friend John Heilman, where they talk about insider stuff that somebody told somebody whose cousin told them. And they do these this is the same guy, mind you, who was suspended for the mandatory minimum of 30 days for calling Barack Obama a dick, I believe.
Yeah, he was kind of a dick.
Kind of a dick. And
Morning Joe.
On the Morning Joe show. Because let's face it, Mark Halperin is just, you know, an extension of the Fox News let's wreck the country machine. And they found a guy who you look at him, he looks like a robot. I mean, he looks
And I want to talk some more about Morning Joe, if you don't mind, dovetail into this. Because Morning Joe and Micah interviewed the Koch brothers this week. Morning Joe also lost his shit over the fact that there are no conservatives running the Sunday shows. Right. There are no conservatives running new network cable news.
Right. None.
And fine. Name one. You can't name one.
Said.
And the amazing thing is he was asking. I'm sorry. Excuse me. He was. The amazing thing is he was asking Mark Halperin this question. Mm-hmm. They had within the past 5 days before Chuck Todd on the show to talk about, you know, whether Marco Rubio had lied or not during the last debate. And at that point, as I recall, tell me if I'm wrong, Morning Joe bonded with Chuck Todd over, I'm a Florida guy, you're a Florida guy. Uh-huh. We know these things. We know this guy. We know these Republican candidates. Mm-hmm. And, Marco Rubio just flat out lied. Right. Well, it depends on what you mean by lie. And yes, the moderator did tell did have factually accurate information, and Marco Rubio was not factually accurate. How can you then, less than 5 days later, say there's no conservative running the Sunday shows and not mention Chuck Todd at all? No one on the panel mentioned Chuck Todd.
Well, you just have to remember Chuck Todd is a servant of his corporate mission, and his corporate mission is never, ever, ever conservative on the air and always get them back. So you can't say anything mean or mean-spirited. I don't know what Chuck Todd's personal life is like or what his voting record is like, but there has never been a more congenial time in American media for Republican lies than right now. mm-hmm. ever. I mean, I don't know if it was even this bad during the height of the Bush administration. There is no accountability at all anymore at the national level for conservatives lying. And one of the lies, one of the biggest lies that conservatives like Joe Scarborough tells every day of his professional life is that the liberals run everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is absolutely, we are really, truly two different countries now, because there is no one left on the right who ventures outside of the Fox News bubble to find out if what they're being told is bullshit or not.
Yeah.
So there's no percentage with Joe. There's no downside for Joe Scarborough to get on his 3 hour a day, 5 day a week cable news program and complain to conservatives on television. I mean, it's self-annihilating. It's self-contradicting. You are a conservative, Joe. You're paid $77,000 or $80,000 a week to lie to the American people to have Chris Christie on and suck his dick, and then bitch about how there's liberals control everything, and then you have Donald Trump on and suck his dick, and then you go on and interview the Koch brothers and suck their dicks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is Fox News. There is no more. There really isn't any more liberal television anymore. I repeat.
And this. I was really struck on the Daily Show this week. They showed Hannity talking about how awful the CNBC debates were and how easy the questions were on the Democratic debate. That yeah. they were about puppies and kittens.
Yeah.
And he immediately, the Daily Show immediately put up clips showing that the questions on the Democratic debate were hard and tough,
yeah,
and so forth. But Hannity can just get away with that because none of his audience watched the Democratic debate.
Oh, and he's not the only one. That was a common spin. It's the Democrats were just given nothing but how attractive you are and how sweet smelling you are and aren't you all awesome questions from the moderators, which is.
Well, their audience doesn't absorb anything but what Hannity tells them to absorb, right?
And that's why we are in such a very, very dangerous place.
In our democracy.
Because
we
really do have an entire political party who is voluntarily cut off from reality and who will not change their mind no matter how many times you smack them in the head with facts. They just dismiss everything from the setting of the sun to the color blue. If a liberal says it, it ain't true, and they know it because Sean Hannity tells them. They're being told to actively ignore basic realities of democracy, basic math. And that's just a fact. So surprise, surprise, the two people leading in that party are fact-free con men.
Well, and this is what happens then when you get an election in Kentucky where the teabagger candidate is actually advocating for returning the health care plan that the state has to the federal government. He wants to move people that are on the Kentucky exchange to the federal exchange. He wants to empower the federal government to run the health care exchange for the state of Kentucky. The whole point of setting up the state exchange was to tell teabaggers Obama has nothing to do with this.
Right.
And so now we have a teabagger that is telling the fact-free message is, no, we're getting rid of Connect, right?
Yeah.
And we're just going to move all those people over to the federal exchange. That makes no sense if you are against the federal government. You are giving Obama more customers. In literally, that's what you're doing. And then the Medicaid thing, he said he was going to seek these 1155 or 1555 waivers. These they've got four digits with lots of fives in them. I don't remember. I'm sorry. These waivers are for states that want to do something a little more Republican with their Medicaid. Usually it's charge a Medicaid recipient 2 to 5% of their income for the privilege of being on Medicaid. And also they can do some cost-cutting innovations, and they can also charge more for emergency room visits to guide people more strongly to primary care physicians for everyday occurrences. So, I mean, these waivers to Obamacare are there to allow states an out to say we're not doing the Medicaid expansion, we're doing something else, but you're actually able to take the Medicaid money and have a waiver on the program. However, that requires approval from the Secretary of Health and Human Services, which last I checked, Health and Human Services was one of the departments that everyone on the debate stage wanted to eliminate. So I'm really confused as to how a teabagger governor of Kentucky can say, I'm running on an anti-Obamacare platform by giving all of the exchange back to the federal government and going on your knees before the Secretary of Health and Human Services to ask for a waiver on Medicaid.
Uh-huh.
This is just, am I being too logical here? I think I am.
I'm just sitting here doing shrugging
your shoulders. Going, I know.
I agree with every word you say, and you might as well be speaking Vulcan to the.
Yeah, I know.
You have to remember, rule one is not, why did you just vote to cut your own throats, people of Kentucky?
Yeah.
Rule
yeah.
one is, remember, Republicans are very, very, very stupid people. Very stupid people. I mean, if I could have one big wish up for the Democratic Party, other than the fact the Democratic Party does not support grassroots, does not support its net roots, and does not support liberal media at all, other than sending me an email every 10 minutes about how they need $3 because Alan Grayson's running for the Senate. That's the only thing I ever hear from the National Democratic Party, ever.
Right, right.
But the thing I really would like all liberals out there to get over is you will never reach these people with reason, ever.
Mm-hmm.
I know it sounds crazy. Why would you vote to cut your own throats? Why would you vote to get rid of your own health care? Why would you vote to do stupid, stupid things like elect an insane person as your governor?
Well, and why would you do something that goes against what you've been saying all along as your goal and your modus operandi, which is to get rid of the federal government? Why would you then go ahead and take on... Throw all of your money and power to the federal government.
Because they didn't think it. They don't think it through that far.
Yeah. Yeah.
Its deficits are great when Bush is in office. There are no deficits. Deficits are bad when the black man's in office. I love America. I love freedom. Fuck you. You're trying to make my kids gay.
Mm-hmm.
These are all the Kim Davis, mole people. Coming out of the ground to vote against the big gay black man in Washington.
And I agree that with the people on, there were several people on Twitter who said this was the Kim Davis election, not the healthcare election. Yeah.
And this was also the election where the 50-state strategy that Dr. Dean proposed and that Rahm Emanuel and Debbie Wasserman Schultz have killed shown through. This is why you campaign in places like this, because if the Democrats had bothered to notice there was an election and come out and vote, the results may very well have been different. But they didn't. Only 30% of Kentucky voters voted. And, and the mole people came out and voted for the crazy man who promised them that Jesus loves them and that he's going to make the evil black man cry. And they don't think it through any further than that. The people, the conservatives who we interact with in either media or argumentation or whatever, don't think any of this shit through at all, ever. They don't. They have no short-term memory, or they have no long-term memory. They don't remember what they believed a month ago or a year ago. You can quote them the crazy shit that they were saying when Clinton was president. You can quote them right back to them the absolutely batshit, exact opposite, bizarro world things they were saying when Bush was president, and they look at you like you're speaking Urdu. They have no. They are. This is what happens when you argue with brainwashed people.
But I think we need to put it together a little more firmly and dovetail these ideas, because Debbie Wasserman Schultz clearly believes that there is a center to persuade.
Right. And there's not.
Right. Otherwise, and so you don't bring Barack Obama to Kentucky, because if you do that, then all the people who could be persuaded to vote Democrat wouldn't do it because they hate Obama. So you have to leave Obama out of the equation instead of recognizing, as I think, I mean, I don't want to speak for Howard Dean, but I think what the 50-state strategy is saying is get your voters motivated to vote for your candidate, and don't try to, first of all, don't wish that there's some sort of center that you can persuade. And also, don't pretend that you're going to persuade the Fox News viewer to vote for you, because you're not.
It's the basic Chicago formula, not dead people, but get your people to the polls. It's not that hard. You get your people to the polls on election day. That's how you win elections. And I agree that we don't want Barack Obama campaigning in Kentucky, but he was campaigning in Kentucky. Matt Bevin went on and on about Barack Obama. My opponent's just like Barack Obama.
Yeah, so Barack Obama was there. It was just the opponent saying it. So why not have a rally in some of the major cities in Kentucky to say that have Obama support to say, no, I'm for this. And let's run on Obamacare and let's run on these things and get our voters motivated to vote.
The same people that Rahm Emanuel and that Debbie Wasserman Schultz are trying to mollify and suck up to are the same people that David Brooks writes columns for, which are very rich people who live in faraway fantasy, who want to believe America is not what America is. And so we're going to pursue the imaginary center that doesn't exist. We're not going to campaign like we passionately believe in what we say we believe in. And we're only going to campaign in areas that are pretty safe and they're pretty okay. And we're going to let the state and locals take care of themselves.
Well, see, I think now that Kentucky's going to the federal exchange, that Obama needs to paste his face all over it. And when Kentuckians log into healthcare.gov, it should say, this is Barack Obama's plan for your health care. You're welcome.
Yeah, well, I think they should call it Kenyanect. And I think that if you have to log in.
Not Kinect.
And if you log in, the first thing you're going to see is Jim Kirk kissing Lieutenant Uhura. So just to log in. And then if you want to change providers, you'll get a shot of Charlton Heston making out with Rosalind Cash from the Omega Man. And just nothing but interracial images with
But you need the black guy kissing the white woman too.
That's when you get your rates. You go to that area.
When you want to find out how much you're going to pay.
Exactly. A lot of very handsome African American men kissing white women should be all over the federal page.
If you're from Kentucky,
an IP address that's anywhere in Kentucky, that's the first thing you're going to see when you come to the page over and over again. That's the thing. It is this completely separate reality. The reality of what's going on in Kentucky, that the Democratic Party, which should be winning, is losing because the National Democratic Party is so fucking obsessed with David Brooks's opinion. They will not get out into the hustings, into the fields to talk to actual people who are running office and support them. Financially, this is where the Koch brothers come. This is why the Morning Joe crew are so happy to grovel in front of the Koch brothers, because for every issue you and I touch on during these podcasts, behind every issue on the right, there's a think tank. And there is
a cottage industry.
There's a vastly well-funded media think tank political engine on every single friggin' issue. When you were talking, Blue Gal, we're talking about the intricacies of the Medicaid weight law. That's because you had to go look that up.
Well, I was really concerned. I mean, we've gotten a couple of letters from Medicaid recipients in Kentucky that are just heartbreaking. Yep. And people who have $2,000 prescriptions who don't know where their meds are going to come from. And believe me, if you've listened to this podcast for more than a year, you know I'm in that boat position with you.
Yep.
My son needs medicine to go to school. And we even had a problem this past time of refilling it where all of a sudden, the HMO which provides Medicaid to us, because that's how they've done it. They've now moved it to a private insurer who takes the Medicaid dollars and insures my kids. Innovation, people, means giving more money to private corporations. Okay. But they decided that Medicaid was my primary insurance and Blue Cross was my secondary. And if you know anything about Medicaid, you realize if I could afford Blue Cross, there's no way my kids would be on Medicaid. I wouldn't qualify. But it held up my kids' prescription. It held up getting it filled because their paperwork said, their computers said, I had, a Cadillac plan for my Medicaid insured kids as a secondary insurer. And I asked, this makes no sense. What are you talking about? Well, it's in the computer, so we can fix it, but we'll have to transfer you to another department. And then I find out they can't transfer. I mean, it goes on and on and on. It's such a bureaucracy, of course, but you're right. I was really wanting to find out what the plan is. What is this guy promising to do? Is he really promising to kick 400,000 of his citizens off of health insurance? Is that really his promise? And someone had to ask him to get into specifics, whether he did or not. And when you go and dig down, there's specifics about these waivers. There's specifics about moving people to the federal exchange. And I'm reading this and thinking, this is not what a teabagger should be promising. It makes, again, makes no sense that he's empowering the federal government to handle his health insurance plan, which, by the way, is a diamond in the crown for states' rights. I mean, if you states' rights has such a bad rap, deservedly. But here is a success story where a state did it right and did it better than the federal government.
Yes,
they did not have the rollout problems that Obamacare did.
Mm-hmm.
They insured people right away.
Yes, they did.
And to then say, well, we're going to hand this back to Obamacare, which is what they're doing. Again, it boggles my mind that Rush Limbaugh isn't saying, whoa, he just wants to give it back to the federal government. If he was a Democrat, that's what would be the charge. If a Democratic candidate said, we're not going to use Connect, we're going to go with the federal exchange, Sean Hannity's hair would be on fire.
Well, may I propose an alternate theory?
Sure.
First of all, I would like to congratulate you on your research.
Okay.
Secondly, I would like to underscore the fact that we are a husband and wife in a little house in a cornfield.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to know enough to comment on any of these issues, we do our own research.
Yeah.
We read stuff and look stuff up. My point is that there should be behind us and next to us and in front of us an entire Democratic Party infrastructure that has these things at their fucking fingertips.
Right.
That is pouring money into local elections, local media, local bloggers to counteract the fact that they're getting killed at the state level where all the fun goes on. But that doesn't happen because the people running the Democratic Party don't see that as an urgent issue.
Right.
And the people, there are lots of rich Democrats. They just don't like to spend their money. There are lots of rich liberals. They just don't like to spend their money down in the cornfields where the monsters come from.
Right. Well, and literally, you think we're talking, you know, poetically when we say that. When they plow the cornfield down the street, we get mice in our kitchen.
Yes.
That literally is what happens. That's how close we are. So,
it's not in a disparaging sense. I moved here from Chicago. I've lived all kinds of, but it's literally true that we are a little house sort of in a cornfield, kind of down the street from a cornfield.
Definitely down the street from a cornfield. Yeah.
And
yeah.
We, you know, this is our infrastructure.
Yeah.
This is it. And you guys. So that's number one. The Democratic Party is failing us pretty spectacularly. And if they don't get it through their heads, they're going to lose and they're going to keep losing. Again, the basic building block of election is getting your people to the polls. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing they're not doing. And I don't understand why they're not all being fired.
I don't understand. I think there's a lot of liberals that don't understand why Debbie Wasserman Schultz is in the role she's in. And again, who do we think would be the perfect DNC chair?
Well, I think Joe Biden.
Biden. Yeah.
He knows, you know, I'm sure he would take the Amtrak down here. I know he has the schedule, you know, the Biden Express, we would call it, if he would like to come down. But may I suggest an alternate theory for why crazy wingnut new governor is getting rid of Connect?
Okay.
Because it works.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a government program that works.
Yep, yep,
and
that's true.
And can't have a government program that works.
That's a success, right,
That blows our whole theory that government is to blame as all.
Well, see, now there's some logic to it, at least. When you say that, that at least has a logic of what I say and what I do actually A points to B. I mean, you know, otherwise it makes no sense, but you're right.
That's his strategy. But the strategy for getting people to the polls had nothing to do with anything logical.
No, I understand that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to switch over and talk about basically the end of the Republican Party when it comes to these debates, when the candidates for the Republican nomination for president of the United States are basically forming a union to go around the RNC, to go around Reince Priebus. Oh, and I actually tweeted what you said about the real tragedy of all of this is that Reince Priebus makes Debbie Wasserman Schultz look like Eleanor Roosevelt.
It's that bad.
That's what's obscene about this. Yeah.
The emptiest suit in politics, Reince Priebus.
But these candidates are, this is not going well. Looking whiny, and like you need Sean Hannity up there asking the questions.
Yes.
In order to be substantive. And what substantive means is, so how much do you hate Hillary Clinton?
Oh, let me tell you. Well, and we found the best, the ideal candidate for moderator. It is Jeff Gannon.
Jeff Gannon is the one. Yeah. Explain to our listeners who may be too young to remember who Jeff Gannon is and why he's important.
Well, Jeff Gannon is the greatest single political story from the Bush administration.
Yeah, he is.
Bar none. And it is one that...
Not international news, just in terms of Washington politics. Yeah. He's the most important story. Yep.
If you ask any conservative who Jeff Gannon is, they will have no idea what the hell you're talking about. And they will think you're lying. They think that that's the liberal Vince Foster. Mm-hmm. It's some story that's so bizarre and outrageous that some liberal must have invented it just to make Republicans look bad.
Yep.
Jeff Gannon was not Jeff Gannon. It might have been James Guckert. It might have been Johnny Gosch. He operated under a lot of different names. This was a guy who was the go-to guy for Scott McClellan and for George Bush in the Washington press corps, the people who sat in the press room and asked questions during the press briefings.
At the White House. This is the White House press briefing inside the White House where the president and his family live.
This is 40 feet away from cabinet members,
right.
Press secretary, and occasionally the president of the United States.
Right.
And he was in there for a couple of...
Well, and Jeff Gannon actually got to ask the president of the United States a few questions in press conferences. Yes.
And his job was to sit there, and when the questions got too, reality-based, when Scott McClellan or George Bush got too uncomfortable with the lies that they were spewing, people were like, wait a minute, that doesn't add up at all. They would toss a question to Jeff Gannon, who would ask questions like, how can you expect to fix Social Security when Democrats are so evil?
You have to hear the questions. Keith Olbermann, there's a YouTube out there of Keith Olbermann playing one Jeff Gannon question after another. And when are the Democrats going to accept reality? And these questions are
people like this.
Right. Really, these kind of questions for real. Are what Jeff Gannon would always ask. Yeah.
For a couple of years, that was his job. And stories were leaked to him. He apparently was brought into the back room a couple of times. He did not have a
White House regular press pass. He had a day pass to come in and sit in the White House. As Leslie Stahl told Bill Maher, this was an incredible security breach.
Yeah.
This person was there under an alias. This was not his real name.
Under at least one alias. He was
there. And he also had a web presence.
He had a day job. Bow, chicky, bow, bow. And he worked for the noted Talon News Service.
Which is made up. I don't know what that is.
But his questions are...
Tell him what his day job... Tell him what his other web presence was. Well,
his questions are the kind of questions that the Republican Party now believes are the kind of questions that a moderator should ask.
Should ask, yep.
So Jeff Gannon was really named James Guckert, and James Guckert was a male prostitute, a gay male prostitute, who ran gay male prostitution rings and
hotmilitarystud.com, that kind of thing. Yes.
And had the pictures of him on the web, and he made his money essentially in the Washington, D.C. area.
By
day, he was the go-to guy for the most gay-hatinist administration. Who got back into power by running a whole bunch of anti-gay slanderous shit in 2004. And again, the question that Bill Maher asked was, now you can't tell me that if this story had happened under the Clinton administration,
if this was Clinton's, you'd have, they'd be impeached.
Pitchforks. Yeah, you'd have mobs outside. But because it was the Bush administration, because it was conservative.
Because it was Karl Rove, and Karl Rove was letting him in. You know, for sure. Yeah.
And Bill Maher said, it's pretty obvious, he's got a boyfriend in the White House.
Absolutely.
And rather than this being a major scandal, you know, this is five Benghazis all rolled.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It was reported by nobody.
Yeah. Except for Bill Maher and Keith Olbermann were the two. Bill Maher,
Keith Olbermann and a bunch of liberal bloggers who were just jumping up and down with their hair on fire going, how the fuck are you not, how is this not the lead story in the New York Times?
And not because of the questions he asked and not because of his gayness, but because a man with an alias who was not giving his real name got a White House pass to come into the building and be in the same room with the president without a background check from the Secret Service. Yeah, for 2 years.
And his day job was prostitution.
Yeah.
You know,
it's illegal. Hello.
It's such a perfect story. And so perfectly exposed how the unbelievable hypocrisy of, and nobody would touch it.
Yeah.
Nobody would touch it. It just fell off the radar. And Jeff Gannon popped up a couple more times on like Bible sword, but he just disappeared. But the questions he asked, the fawning, why, how can you work with Democrats who are so evil kind of questions that he was famous for asking are exactly the questions that the Republican candidates for president now believe should be sort of the baseline. These should be the kind of questions that they should be subjected to, not stuff having to do with your past or math or your position on anything or shit you said yesterday, but fawning right-wing talk radio type questions about how awful the Democrats are and how are you going to help us exterminate them.
Mm-hmm.
And they have buffaloed the Republican National Committee and the networks into essentially acceding to their demands. They have found the strength that they have because one among them, a man named Donald Trump, finally figured out what the debates are all about.
Yeah.
They're about money.
They're about money.
They're about ratings. 4 years ago.
They're about selling advertising. Yeah. Yep.
Four years ago, a 30-second ad or a one-minute ad on these debates was $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's $250,000. That's how much money
Donald Trump is giving the networks. Yep. Yep.
He and Ben Carson are turning around saying, I don't want to answer these stupid questions.
Yeah.
I don't want to be asked anything that I don't want to answer to. And because this is an entertainment product being put on for the enrichment of people in the network, they're going to get pretty much anything they want because all they have to do is say, fine, we're not showing up. Now, what this does is for the rest of us who live outside the crazy bubble, it opens up the possibility that Democrats may end up with two Spanish language debates this time around or Spanish language station debates this time around, because one of the groups that the Republicans say they don't want to talk to at all is the Spanish language station.
And it looks like the Democrats are now going to have two Spanish language debates because they're in talks to take over the debate slot that has been abandoned by the RNC that just canceled because of the way we were treated. Yes. So
now take your pick. You can stick a fork into this long turd anywhere you want and pull out a golden corn nugget.
Yep.
You can find a great story, whether it's the level of questioning that Republicans expect, the complete capitulation of networks and
corporations and money.
Corporations demands of the entertainment candidates. The fact that Barack Obama is now Shecky Green is just firing off. You can find a great story anywhere in here, but they all participate in the same reality. And the reality is the Republican Party is dead. And because that's the meta story, because the story that overarches everything else is the complete collapse of the Republican Party, as you or I may have known it 20 years ago, and its replacement by this sort of grotesque hybrid corporate fascist oligarchy monster that's run by the Kim Davis crazies of the world, feeds directly into their brains and sucks their votes directly and their money directly out of their pockets. No, that's the story. And that is, of course, as we say often on this podcast, that is the story that no one on television wants to talk about.
Yeah. And the other story that you continually have mentioned on this podcast is that the people who claim to be Republican leadership have not been Republican leadership for 30 years, 35 years.
Yeah.
Rush Limbaugh runs the Republican Party.
Yes, he does.
And Roger Ailes runs the Republican Party. As far as boots on the ground voters are concerned, those are their leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find interesting is that the blondes and leggy brunettes on Fox News Network have this week been making fun of the Republican candidates' demands for debate temperature in the room. And, you know, Roger Ailes is just laughing at this. And the next debate next Tuesday mm-hmm. is on Fox Business.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be really interesting to see how exploited these poor Republicans get by Fox Business candidates.
Well, they make Carly Fiorina wear a miniskirt and sit under a glass tabletop.
You know, with her legs crossed. Yeah,
Roger Ailes, because that is why, by the way, that's why they do that. Having read The Loudest Voice in the Room, Roger Ailes has glass tabletops and miniskirts because he wants people to take to look up their legs. It's all television. It's all production value. This is here's where the rubber meets the road. This is all sort of abstract at the national level. At the local level, you know, we occasionally run into former governors in our travels. We run into the Governor Jim Edgar every now and then in our town. Believe it or not, he eats at restaurants here. He lives around here. Jim Thompson pops in every now and then. These are former Republican governors.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are appalled.
Yes. ashamed, yes.
They are, in a very real sense, the old Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of green eye shade, balance your budget, you know, we'll pay for stuff, and compromise, and, you know, I'll be stern but fair. Who did a lot of things I don't agree with, but they were definitely part of a different generation of political leader.
Well, and they would look at a budget and say, if you're going to cut taxes, that is going to create a deficit. If you don't cut spending and you just spend wildly on defense and charge three wars to a credit card and cut taxes, you're going to have a deficit. And they lived, unfortunately for them, in the reality-based world of requiring a balanced budget. So you couldn't just print money. States can't print money.
Mm-hmm.
But therefore, their reality was, yes, we need to have revenue.
Well, and they, right? they, along with every other governor, underfunded the retirement fund.
Yeah, sure. There's a lot of culpability. Yeah.
Democrats, yeah. Illinois is not, there's not a pure Democratic Party in Illinois.
No.
And a wicked Republican Party.
No.
They're all deeply tainted.
Mm-hmm.
But at the gubernatorial level, right up until Rod Blagojevich, there was this sort of consensus agreement that, you know, we'll cut a little bit and we'll spend a little bit, but nobody's going to do anything fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to go completely off the reservation and start doing crazy things because actual people's lives will be ruined if we can't figure a way to get along.
Yep.
And they fought and they contended and they ran against each other and they said mean things about each other. But the degree to which the older Republicans in the state are appalled with Rauner, are horrified by what he's doing. Because what he has done, we elected a governor in the state. I can't look down my nose at Kentucky. Illinois elected a, you know, governor hedge fund.
Right.
A vicious right-wing ideologue who wants to cut everything.
Yeah.
And doesn't give a shit because he's a billionaire. You can't threaten him. You can't budge him. And if you want to run for office in the state and you're a Republican, you pretty much have to go to his checkbook.
Yeah.
So that's what we have.
And he has donated campaign money to every single Republican in the state house.
Yeah. So he is our Roger Ailes. If Roger Ailes were also president of the United States. And here's what's happened in our state. Simply because Bruce Rauner refuses to, he's here to bust unions and gut social programs and run the state like a business.
Mm-hmm.
And he's half a loaf is not enough. Two thirds of a loaf is not enough. He wants everything he wants and screw you if I don't get it. And he's really clear about that. And because he will not cooperate at all, he's a true ideologue in that regard. We have no budget in Illinois. And we haven't had a budget since June or July in Illinois.
Yep.
And what that means is senior services, you know, at-home meals seniors are over. The Autism Network, TAP, the autism program, the statewide autism program that was an awesome program, is effectively dead. And here's the thing about social service programs. It takes a long time to build them up into something where you have knowledgeable people who have a depth of experience and can deliver services with certain continuity over time. But these are also organizations that operate under one-year budgets.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you yank it out from under them, it's not like a business that has a whole bunch in reserve or a bank that has reserves that can draw on or some other thing that they can go off and, you know, fly kites for a year and come back and do what they were doing. If you stop funding a social service organization for any length of time, it just disintegrates.
Yeah.
And it goes away. Autism Network is gone. Donors to the Lincoln Museum or the State Museum are worried that what's happening to the donations. And I gave this $3 million exhibit. Now that you've closed the museum, there's no hope of ever opening again, maybe. What happened to all the Lincoln memorabilia I donated? Well, we don't know. Lottery winners in Illinois are being given IOUs.
IOUs, yeah. That is amazing.
And there are a lot of other federally funded government functions that are slowing down or stopping because the state is losing its capacity to write checks just to process the funds. If you have no state government,
Medicaid can't process payments to doctors because the state doesn't have a budget to do that. It's amazing. It's amazing that it's been allowed to go on this long.
And it doesn't matter that the federal government funds the wheels and the carburetor and the radio and the chassis of your car. The state government is the engine that disperses the power to the wheels.
Or the gas. It's the gas, and there's no gas. Yeah.
And so nothing goes. And last but not least, no Christmas lights on the Capitol Dome this year.
Oh, man.
Because we can't have that, because we can't have nice things. This is what happens when you elect Republicans. It's as simple as that. This is what and you will never hear me say a nice thing about Rod Blagojevich, who is a criminal and deserves to be in jail. But there is a class of ideologue out there for whom looking out across a state with no programs for children, no programs for seniors, no insurance for moochers, who looks out on that and says, that's a good thing. That's exactly what we should be doing in this state, cutting everything for everyone and pocketing the money ourselves. And if you put these people in power, this is what you get.
All right. Well, I was going to do a little Bible bitch.
Bible bitch.
That's not scriptural.
I love Bible
books. Well, I found a blog post about Ben Carson from 2008 this week. It's at a blog that I don't even know if is in existence anymore, but it's an old blog called The Christian Monist, M-O-N-I-S-T. This guy did some research into Ben Carson because he had a intellectual argument with a pastor who was touting glyconutrients and Manitech. This is back in 2008. And I did not realize until this week that Manitech marketed itself very strongly to evangelical Christians.
Why would you?
Well, that's the focus of their marketing.
Exactly. I mean, why would anybody know that?
I know because, glyconutrients, that's what Moses had. You know, the glyconutrients, the manna tech, get it? Manna?
Oh, see?
Yeah. So, you need to feed yourself these patented glyconutrients, and that's going to cure diseases and every disease from arthritis, cancer, AIDS, autism can benefit from glyconutrients. And they were really in their advertising, even though they got sued by the state of Texas and lost and had to pay millions of dollars to their customers and a million dollar fine to the state and so forth. They tried to get away with it by going on and on and on about glyconutrients and their benefits of glyconutrients. And then totally separately from that discussion, say the people that have glyconutrients in their products are Manitech. So it wasn't like they were promising Manitech did this. It was the glyconutrients, but it was completely dishonest. So this man who wrote this blog, and by the way, the URL of the blog is evangelicalinthewilderness.blogspot.com.
I do wish they would have named it something like Brondo.
I know, really. It's what plants crave. Yes.
It's got what Christians crave.
See? this blog, this guy is both an evangelical Christian and a medical doctor, and he was really alarmed that this pastor that he knew personally was talking to people about going off your chemotherapy and taking glyconutrients, and that this was going to cure your cancer because God had revealed to him that glyconutrients were great. Okay. Long story short, this guy who was selling these glyconutrients mentioned Ben Carson. This is back in 2008. Mentioned, well, glyconutrients are good because they're endorsed by Ben Carson. So you have to know that, you know, this is good stuff. This blogger called Ben Carson's office to ask about it. Mm-hmm. And this tends to back up what Ben Carson has said. I'm going to be fair about this. He says, I didn't get to speak to him directly. His office answered the question as to whether Dr. Carson was endorsing Manitech or not. The answer was absolutely not. He had spoken at one Manitech convention as a paid motivational speaker. He speaks to a variety of groups, whoever wants him, and will pay for him to be there. So he's a money shill, which we all knew that. You know, he'll talk to anybody for 40 to 50 grand. But he was not endorsing the product. Finally, this pastor who was promising to cure cancer and you should go off your chemo admitted that he was a salesman for Manitech and was earning money from Manitech for selling this product. And at that time, I got a personal call from the vice president of Manitech, who was very apologetic. Dr. Carson had called him expressing concern that their salespeople were using his name in their sales pitches. So, you know, that does back up what Ben Carson is saying, that he did not endorse Manitech, but he certainly took money from them and was happy to take money from them to give motivational speeches about, you need to look into these glyconutrients. And you can watch the videos. I mean, they're on YouTube now, of your glyconutrients. You know, it makes a lot of sense, and you might want to think about looking into what these are. But he didn't endorse the product. Again, it's that separation of, we think these nutrients are great. Right. Who has the nutrients? They're patented by Manitech, but you know, I'm not selling Manitech, right?
I'm just teaching the controversy.
Yes.
I'm not saying the earth is 9,000 years old.
But what gets me is the marketing to evangelicals. And this guy in this blog post talks about that. Why are we so gullible? Why is evangelical Christianity so vulnerable? And he says one of the reasons is we tend to keep in our minds Matthew 7, judge not lest ye be judged. That doesn't mean that you turn off your brain and just accept whatever any good Christian person who doesn't swear and doesn't smoke tells you is true. And the whole Ben Carson candidacy is based on, well, you know, I can't judge whether he's being factually correct about anything, but he appeals to me as a good Christian man, right?
Right.
So, not to dig out a Bible verse that somehow proves what I'm saying is true. That's not why I'm reading to you from 2 Timothy. I want to read 2 Timothy because it points out that this has always been the case. And when Paul talks about, don't be naive. There are people out there who are self-absorbed, money-hungry, this is from the Bible, self-absorbed, money-hungry, self-promoting, will make a show of religion, but behind the scenes, they're animals. Stay clear of these people. These are the kind of people who smooth-talk themselves into the homes of unstable and needy women and take advantage of them. Women who, depressed by their sinfulness, take up with every new religious fad that calls itself truth. They get exploited every time, and they never really learn.
Wow.
And so, yeah.
Wow. It's as old as that, is it?
It's as old as that. And that's my point, is not to pull out some Bible verse and say, see, this is true, but to point out to you that even Paul in the ancient days was dealing with self-absorbed, money-hungry, self-promoting shows of religion and gullible people who couldn't face their own humanity, so they would go with the good Christian. You know, oh, he's a good Christian man. That's what got us George W. Bush. Well, he's good. I think he's a good Christian man. and never mind what he did. I don't want to trouble my brain with that.
Well, and it's that this is sort of the bastard children of the televangelists of the 70s and 80s, who, you know, to whom nice little old ladies mailed their checks.
Yeah.
And got prayed over through the TV machine.
Yep.
And he came because he was in their home every day and he was intimate. And he talked to them about, you know, God and heaven and mortality and how they can be saved and promised them all kinds of things. And it is no accident that these people have an on switch in there. Because if they were just universalable about everything, I'd say, okay, well, you know, that's fine. This is the classic literary fool, you know, who's a person with a good heart and falls for everything and is sort of a Charlie Chaplin sad tramp.
Yep.
It's sort of the classic literary dupe. But they're not. See, they turn their gullibility off and on very, very selectively. When it comes to Ben Carson having a personal theory that Joseph built the pyramids to store grain, well, he's very open about that because, you know, it's possible because all things are possible with God. Some scientists say aliens built it. But
yeah.
We know that's just crazy talk. We know God had Joseph build it to store the grain in, which is insane.
Yeah.
So he's perfectly willing to be open-minded about that. But then you get the same people talking about, I don't know, climate change.
Yeah.
Or evolution, or gun control, or civil rights, or math. And suddenly they're very, very, they retreat down back to the Fox News hole where those facts aren't there. So I would have no trouble with someone who is, I'd have trouble in terms of finding a way to protect them from con artists and hucksters.
Yeah. But
it is the very select of their non-judgmentalness. They don't judge fellow right-wing ideologues.
Exactly. People in their tribe. Yep.
But God help you if you're one of them bleeding heart liberals who takes the other 90% of the New Testament and says, how about all this other shit about poor and the needy and children and all that other stuff that you seem to really be comfortable with just tossing on the bonfire and forgetting about? If you're one of those people, all they do is judge.
You are
judged irrelevant and not worthy of listening to by virtue of the fact that you're not in their tribe. And that's what keeps their little cult running on and on year after year is the fact that internally they're absurd.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Emily. Emily is a beautiful Blue Point Siamese who was a rescue. We love our rescue kitties. And you should visit Emily at our Facebook page and website. She's just beautiful. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Unions letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And now that the holidays are approaching, don't forget our Amazon link at our website. Someone bought a vacuum cleaner, and we got, from someone buying a vacuum cleaner at Amazon, we got like a $25 donation.
Yeah. And you know podcast. What? I always thought nature abhorred a vacuum, but it's not true.
It's not true.
How do you buy it through Amazon?
Not if you buy your vacuum cleaner through Amazon. I mean, it was an amazing donation that came to us and didn't cost the purchaser of the vacuum cleaner one thin dime. We do believe in buying local. It's actually a mission in our house to buy local. But we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. I particularly this week want to thank those listeners who click on the PayPal button to donate monthly and throw $5 in the hat once a month. That's our bread and butter. That pays our electric bill every month. And we need that, and we appreciate it. So thank you for doing that. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you. We got word this week that Amazon Music... Was it? No, Google Play. Google Play is going to start running a podcast feature or start having podcasts on Google Play, which opens up a new world of audience for podcasts on Android devices. So if you have Google Play on your Android phone, watch for us down the road. It hasn't happened yet. They haven't opened up podcasts on Google Play, but we have been approved to, it's always nice to have approval.
Yes.
We have been approved to be on Google Play Podcasts. So watch for that, and we really appreciate it. I would also like to welcome to the podcast world a brand new podcast called Hopping Mad with Will McLeod and Arliss Bunny. Yeah, Arliss Bunny is an expert in deficits and funding and how government funds itself.
Yeah.
They have started a new podcast. They launched it September 21st. It's called Hopping Mad. And they have switched over to our podcast provider, Buzzsprout, based on our recommendation. Aww. And so there have been a lot of emails back and forth with Buzzsprout and Arliss and me and everybody talking to one another and making sure they feel supported in getting their podcast started. And both Arliss and her podcast partner, Will McLeod, have great voices and sound good. I've only listened to a few minutes of their podcast so far. They are, again, at Hopping Mad with Will McLeod and Arliss Bunny. And also, they are on the air at 8 a.m. on Mondays on Netroots Radio, which we love Netroots Radio. They feature our show as well. The people over at Netroots Radio work very hard to make sure that progressive podcasting has a place on the internet, and we so appreciate that.
They do.
Yeah. And please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Thank you for doing that. Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Oh, Blue Gal, the internet kitties are glad to hear that the Pataki and Jindal campaigns have been sent to a farm upstate where they can run for president all day long.
Let's think about living. Think about living. Let's think about loving. Think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey dovin'. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Love Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2015, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Science Fiction University, this week we're using a Science Fiction University trivia quiz from...
Thanks, Internet.
...from funtrivia.com. And Dogface Tournament sent us a list of recommendations, film recommendations, all of which were very obscure. So I'm going to put those together in a post that we will post to our blogs and also to our Facebook page so that people can read Dogface Tournament's recommendations for obscure science fiction movies that are very good.
Curated
list of science fiction movies. They're so obscure that no one would get them, I don't think, or certainly wouldn't get them in a way that would be fun for our listeners, I don't think. So we're going to do this. This is funtrivia.com, sci-fi movie stumpers from the 50s.
All right. Now, I watched a lot of crap movies from the 50s, but they all tend to run together in my head.
Well, they would, because black and white, the major theme that can't miss is radiation.
Radiation will kill us all. Bad things come from space.
And radiation.
And you know what can stop monsters unleashed by radiation? More radiation.
There you go. All right. So here are 10 questions. Let's see how you do. And they're multiple choice.
Okay.
Number one, what classic science fiction film contained the following line of dialogue? What sin could a man commit in a single lifetime to bring this upon himself? Was it A, The Amazing Colossal Man?
Ooh.
B, The Cyclops?
Yeah.
C, Godzilla King of the Monsters? Or D, The Incredible Shrinking Man?
I'm going to go with The Incredible Shrinking Man, opting for one end of the spectrum over the other.
All right. Well, you were wrong, Spectrum. It's it's The Amazing Colossal Man.
Well, they were both cursed in the same way.
Yes. Do you remember what the name of the human being was who became the Amazing Colossal Man?
Oh, yes. It's everywhere. It's a meme. It's Glenn Manning.
Glenn Manning. That's right. Colonel Glenn Manning uttered that immortal phrase in a moment of self-pity while on a picnic with his now much smaller fiance, Carol Forrest. Manning, of course, was exposed to irradiation. That's what did it. And survived.
He survived by putting his hands over his face.
See?
Because that's how that works. Yeah, he was trying to save somebody, I think. There was some.
Yeah,
he
saved the pilot of a plane that crashed at the site of an atomic bomb test. And how did Manning die? Do you remember that?
He was taken out of the picture by being verdammed and being strafed into down into the great depths there. Knocked off.
Right, he fell off Hoover Dam. Yes, he went insane. Yes.
Because that is what happens when you grow very tall.
Everybody.
Or you're Irish, which I'm
everybody
both,
so knows like, you're both.
But he returned in the Return of the Amazing Colossal Man.
So apparently that fall into Hoover Dam did not kill him.
No.
In time for a sequel.
Wounded him enough that he'd have to sit, he'd have to return for a sequel where his face was horribly made up and he wore the same diapers and had a big head.
Oh, no. All right. Number two. What movie began with the following narration? You are about to land in a lonely zone of terror on an unexplored atoll in the Pacific. You are part of the second scientific expedition dispatched to this mysterious bit of coral reef and volcanic rock. The first group has disappeared without a trace. Was it A, Attack of the Crab Monsters, B, The Day the World Ended, C, Gigantus the Fire Monster, or D, The Brain Eaters?
I'm going to go The Day the World Ended or The Day the Earth Ended or whatever it was.
Actually, it was Attack of the Crab Monsters.
Oh.
And this was Roger Corman.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, crab monsters granted intelligence. Why? Exposure to radiation.
Radiation, yes. Honestly, it sounds like an episode of Gilligan's Island.
Well, you know, you said Gilligan's Island.
I did.
The 1957 film also featured Russell Johnson as Handyman Hank Chapman. Before he was a professor on Gilligan's Island. So there is a connection between this movie and Gilligan's Island.
I swear we saw this movie.
You know, we saw a movie with Russell Johnson in it that was just... They obviously had a police car, a pickup truck, and a sedan. Uh-huh. And the people in the movie just drive up to some abandoned desert area, get attacked by a monster, and run back to their cars and get in and drive away.
And return as zombies or...
Yeah, whatever. Or something. Yeah, or something. Get killed, or some of them do, some of them don't, but... Clearly, they had, a 50-foot area where they could film behind rocks and stuff, and three cars, one of which was painted as a police car. So, I don't know what movie that was. Maybe someone can write in and tell us. All right. Number three, in Gigantus the Fire Monster from 1955, what sage advice did Tsukioka give his happy but lovelorn pal, Kobayashi?
Ooh. Ooh.
Now, I will warn you that all of these quotes are from Gigantus, so you really have to know your Gigantus movie to know which of these did Tsukioka tell Kobayashi. So this is a hard one. A is, our fate is no longer in the lap of science, but in the lap of the gods.
That's Ben Carson.
B, trying to please a woman is like swimming the ocean.
Okay.
C, all men are like fish in a woman's net. And D, we were together for all time now, and we could once more live out our lives in happiness.
Wow. Okay, the last one sounds disturbingly cultish.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with the women in the net and the fish.
All men are like fish in a woman's net.
Because that's the phrase of a man who will never get laid, uttering to his equally desperate friend about why he's not getting any action.
Here's why I'm not getting any action. I talk like this.
Yes.
I talk about women as being fishermen.
Women suck and everything's awful. Men get screwed all the time. That's right. Yeah.
And that's why you never get laid. Okay. Yeah. No, actually... Tsukioka told Kobayashi, trying to please a woman is like swimming the ocean.
Oh,
see, another one that will get you laid. Yes. Okay.
I thought that was the cover blurb from Iron John.
Believe it or not, Paul Frees, Marvin Miller, and George Takei provided many of the characters' voices in this movie. The film was renamed Godzilla Raids Again, R-A-I-D-S.
Oh, well, if you told me that up front, I would have pulled that right out of thin air.
Though the story still refers to Gigantus the Fire Monster. All right, number four. Okay. In which very intelligent sci-fi film was the following oath sworn? I swear to get into the tower and look to see if old Tom sleeps there every night. Was it A, Enemy from Space,
okay,
B, the Quartermass Experiment, C, the Creeping Unknown, or D, X, the Unknown?
I got no idea. I'm doing great at this, right? I've gotten them all right so far.
No, you've got them all wrong so far.
Oh, okay. Well, Quartermass was a series of science fiction movies from Britain.
Hmm.
Which were all pretty clever and smart. And since that's the word I'm latching onto here is smart,
mm-hmm,
I'm going to just shoot in the dark and say.
No, actually, it was X the Unknown. The oath was sworn by two young boys, Ian Osborne and Willie Harding, in a dark forest. Willie attempted to fulfill the swear, as he called it, but happened upon the radioactive blob that had been terrorizing the countryside.
Goddamn radiation.
The frightened boy fled and later died of radiation poisoning. His death did, however, end up helping Dr. Adam Royston in his efforts to destroy the creature in this excellently made and written 1957 thriller. Okay, so that's one to put on the list, apparently. The X, the Unknown from 1957. All right, number five. What controversial 1958 B-movie was set in and around the town of Riverdale, Illinois? And Riverdale, isn't that where Archie comes from? Archie Comics? I think it is.
Probably.
He lives in Riverdale, yeah. Okay, but this isn't an Archie movie, I promise you. Controversial 1958 B-movie. A, The Brain Eaters. B, The Earth Dies Screaming. C, Beginning of the End, and D, The Snow Creature.
I can't imagine what would be controversial in 1958. Maybe someone with a skirt that goes above the ankle, or some young toughs riding a sports car and smoking jazz cigarettes. But I'm going to go with, I really want it to be The Earth Died Screaming.
Okay, no, it is The Brain Eaters.
Okay. I had no idea.
Yeah, you're batting zero right now. But listen, The Brain Eaters was controversial in that it was a completely unauthorized adaptation of Robert Heinlein's book, The Puppet Masters. The small town was beset by parasites from the Carboniferous era, which could control any human that they were attached to, and then use them to achieve their aims of conquest.
Yes, that is The Puppet Masters. In which people have to go topless.
Oh, wow.
To you know, because they latch onto your back. So people have to go topless.
So that's why it would be controversial if you got to see boobs. But
yeah.
Unfortunately, this was also one of the rare science fiction films in which nearly all of the protagonists get killed by the end of the movie.
It's like The Walking Dead.
It is.
You're not going to kill Glenn, are you?
No. Yeah. All right. No. Number six. Yeah. And you know, that burial scene of Daryl this weekend was
child.
Really bad.
And
middle child.
This week, actually, because it was 90 minutes last week.
Uh-huh.
This week, it's only 10 minutes.
It's the burial of Daryl, right? You keep telling middle child.
The long push into a graveyard, and there's a headstone, and it says, Daryl.
Daryl.
And then a hand comes out of the grave. And that's it.
When middle child orders food online from a restaurant, when we order food to bring back home, that on Friday nights, it's takeout Friday. We have to put the name of each person, and she puts Mrs. Daryl Dixon down.
Yes. And having picked that up at least once or more.
Yeah, you pick it up.
I have been asked, so you're Walking Dead fans, are you? Yeah.
Because they have to write Mrs. Daryl Dixon on her vegetarian entree, right? Yes. And that's the irony. The irony is Mrs. Daryl Dixon is a vegetarian.
Yeah.
All right. Where are we? Oh, we're on number six.
We're all one zombie apocalypse away from being on the board. So.
Number six, what was the name of the government lab that figured prominently in the science fiction flick Kronos from 1957.
Is that with a C-H or a K?
It's a K-R-O-N-O-S, yes.
Oh, that's entirely different.
A, Alpha Central. B, Lab Central. C, Kronos Technology, spelled with a C-H for some reason.
Liar. See?
And D, U.S. Central Research and Development Laboratories.
Oh, it's not D. I worked there about 20 years ago. Alpha something?
Alpha Central? Is that
Central.
Is that your final answer?
It just sounds just cheesy enough to be in a science fiction movie.
Wrong. It's Lab Central.
Oh, so, okay.
And Dr. Hubble Elliott was head of Lab Central and became possessed by the energy creature that had a symbiotic link with the alien robot. His colleague, Dr. Leslie Gaskell, uh-huh. Jeff Murrow, uh-huh. gave the giant mechanism the name Kronos and was instrumental in its destruction.
To scare people.
Right.
A little known fact.
Mm-hmm.
That the one thing I know about this movie for sure,
mm-hmm.
it was directed by Ingmar Bergman. I'm pretty sure it was directed
by Ingmar Bergman. It was directed by Ingmar Bergman.
There's a lot of gloomy death subtext, and I believe Kronos spends most of the movie playing chess.
Playing chess, that's a different movie.
On a beach.
I think that's a different movie. Okay.
With Russell Johnson, I believe.
The professor from Gilligan's Island. Yeah, okay. Number 7.
Uh-huh.
We have to give this a little more gravitas, I think.
Yeah. Oh, sure. All the gravitas it deserves. Yes.
Number 7. In Fiend Without a Face, 1957.
Sorry, Russell Johnson. Yeah.
No. What theory was Dr. Walgate working on when he discovered he could use the energy from the radar tests to boost his own brain power? Was he using the theory A, thought materialization? B, cybernetics, S-I-B,
cybernetics.
C, mind control, or D, mental vampirism.
It sounds like he's testing the theory that if you take the R out of a word, you can change its meaning. Like, this originally was friend without a face, and now it's fiend without a face. I want it to be the vampire thingy.
Vampirism. You want it to be that.
I really do. It can't possibly be, but I really want it to be.
It's thought materialization.
Oh, yeah. Like because when I make a sandwich.
Dr. Walgate was a respected scientist before a stroke befell him.
Oh, yeah.
In his experiments, he originally created the fiends to be receptacles for his detached thoughts. They are made in the image of a brain without life and mobility and without the limitations of a man's body. But they later took on minds of their own and were only stopped after Major Cummings managed to blow up the power plant from which they had been absorbing energy.
Wow.
Fiend Without a Face featured some truly intriguing monsters which were somewhat graphic, especially when they were killed for the time period. Okay.
I think I might have actually seen this.
Like when the brain exploded? Yeah,
yeah.
That'd be kind of something. All right.
I remember a cave with a big brain with two bug eyes in front of it. I like Major Cummings. I think that's a really good, like,
really?
Pseudo porn name for
pseudo. There's nothing pseudo about it.
Next week, right. Gay subtext in 1960s science fiction.
Major Cummings. All right. Mm-hmm. Number 8. What was the code name of the atomic test? Again, with the atomic.
Uh-huh.
The code name of the atomic test that freed the beast from 20,000 fathoms from the frozen ice. Was it A, Experiment Omega, B, Mission Gigantic, another poor name, C, Operation Experiment, C, Operation Experiment, or D, Operation Behemoth?
So splody, splody, splody is not one of the choices.
No.
Okay, because that would give it away.
Uh-huh.
There's an Omega one in there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm liking that.
All right. Actually, no, it is Operation Experiment, which is the blandest of all of them.
Uh-huh.
This test was designed by Dr. Tom Nesbitt, who would later play a pivotal role in finding and destroying the radioactive Rhetosaurus. This 1954 movie was one of the first of the giant monster on the loose films. Like Gojira, It, too, was partially inspired by the re-release of King Kong in the early 50s. Okay.
Wow. Okay. I think
you haven't gotten any right yet. All right. Number nine. What amazingly cheap movie began with two murders out near the old Willow Place, both of which were attributed in the press to the monster of the Lake Marsh? Was it A, the Alligator People, B, Invasion of the Animal People,
ooh,
C, Night of the Ghouls,
ooh,
or D, Bride of the Monster?
Well, ghouls aren't really science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to have to go with the Bride of the Monster.
You are correct. Congratulations.
Wow.
Yeah, Bride of the Monster. An amazingly cheap movie. Bride of the Monster was arguably Ed Wood's best science fiction effort.
Oh,
this movie featured the last speaking performance of Bela Lugosi.
Oh, yeah.
Bela grunted and grimaced his way through the black sleep.
Huh?
And Wood later used some silent test footage in the making of Plan 9 from Outer Space.
He sure did, which was on the other night.
This movie, in Bride of the Monster, Bela Lugosi plays Dr. Orloff, who was obsessed with his strange theories to create a race of atomic supermen to take over the world. Okay.
Yeah.
And number 10, finally, the last one. In what 1957 movie did a wrongly executed man come back from the dead to wreak vengeance on those who dared to have him killed? He was finally re-killed by a simple knife through the heart.
Pale Rider?
No, it was A, From Hell It Came, B, Indestructible Man, C, Horror of Dracula, or D, Curse of the Faceless Man.
I'd like to say that this is the plot of half of Clint Eastwood's movies, other than the knife in the chest.
Yeah, that's true.
I got to go with the Indestructible Man with No Name.
No, it was From Hell It Came.
Oh, well.
Not to Hell and Back. But From Hell It Came.
Sure.
Was and still is often panned because it basically features an evil tree stalking people. It wasn't that bad of a film and had some pretty decent performances by Tom Andrews and Tina Carver. Andrews was the one to eventually bring down the creature by shooting at the knife that was already stuck in the beast's chest.
Huh.
Chest. From the execution attempt at the beginning of the film, he drove the knife through the beast's heart.
So it's an ent, baby.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings. Okay.
See? That's what it is.
Wow.
All right, everybody.
Well, occasionally I need to be humbled by my
lack
of knowledge.
By a science fiction university.
And I was and am quite humbled by the
internet. So there
internet.
You go. The internet knows more than you do, apparently.
Has once again defeated me. Damn you, internet.
Damn you, internet. And we'll be back next week. Again, we're going to publish these recommendations from Dogface Turman, and we'll put some YouTubes in there so you can see clips from these movies that he recommends. I'm wondering if there's anything we need to talk about other than that. The new Star Wars posters are out.
There's supposed to be a new Star Wars TV series.
Yeah, yeah.
Childhood's End is made or is being made.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the second episode of Man in the High Castle.
Yeah, that's available on Amazon now, and they're working on that. Yeah, so there's some stuff coming out.
It's a golden age, people. It's a golden age. You know, but don't ignore those moldering old paperbacks on the back of your bookshelf.
Oh no, yeah.
That's where the good stuff is.
And we're very grateful. Raymond has sent us some of those.
Oh yeah,
and they're really good books. So deeply appreciate listener Raymond for sending us books. Classic books of science fiction.
And if you would like us to tackle any science fiction-y topics,
yeah,
please let us know.
Please let us know.
Because I have noticed, Blue Gal, that in all of your Esquires and your Slateses and Foxeses, all of the young guns, the young ladies and gentlemen who are in their 20s and 30s who are now writing columns and making princely sums, running newspaper and media empires, are discovering how interestingly predictive science fiction is. And every now and then I will get a tweet from somebody going, you know, Jeet here over at wherever he writes, Slate, I think, is talking about, isn't it weird how science fiction, blah, blah, blah. Hey, isn't it weird that Ezra Klein is talking about science fiction, blah, blah, blah. Hey, isn't it weird that Atlantic, I'm like, yeah, yeah. If only there was someone out there where There was some overlap person who knew a lot about science fiction, and a lot about politics, and a little bit about history, and could write intelligently about these topics.
Damn. Right.
Damn. Well, you know, I guess there's no market for that sort of thing. That's just crazy talk.
All right. Thank you, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.
Oh, and can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
Thank you for all the people who kicked into my fundraiser.
Yeah.
Highly appreciated. I believe all my thank you notes are sent out, which is astonishing for me.
That's better than you're doing better than I am. Yeah. Okay.
I deeply appreciate it, and thank you for all the lovely birthday wishes, and I hope your Halloween was half as good as mine.
And thank you for all the kind blogiversary wishes that I got on Twitter, too. And thank you, Driftglass, for posting that nice blogiversary
post
to your blog. I love you, too. Have a good week, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.